I have an administrative question.
Yes.
Is anyone else keeping notes?
Is it a what?
Is anyone else signed up for taking notes?
No.
Okay. I'll
do
that.
Anybody who's good at taking notes and talking at the same time, which I'm not, I would encourage you.
I didn't recognize the voice that brought that up, but I nominate that person for volunteering.
I second it.
This was Joe Ander. I already put a link on the wiki into the notes that I'm writing, but first they won't be there until I write them.
Okay.
Okay.
So. It's always something with you, Joe, isn't it?
I guess, Doc, we should officially begin then.
Dean's running this call because he's taken the initiative, and I think we fly like geese, and whichever one has the most energy and wants to move to the front of the V can do that. But I just like to say that I think each of us just take down the things that they're responsible for and have done or will do, and I just said that I'll have the Berkman Center create a Jabber server that hopefully will work. So that's my responsibility. I also said at the last at the meeting we had two Thursdays ago that that I would have a set up a blog, and that has not happened yet. So I was pounding on the wrong door at Berkman, and now yesterday I pounded on the right door, and hopefully something will happen within the next few days. A question about that is, how do we want to choose who and how we can, any of us can blog on the blog? So, or do we want to, would our preference be having blog posts we put somewhere else, RSS or otherwise, feed their way into the common Project VRM blog? Anybody have any thoughts about that? I've not done this kind of thing.
I have a very strong thought on one side of that, Doc. And that's the Berkman blogs are WordPress blogs, and
yes,
there's a constant glitch in WordPress in signing in. And you can have multiple sign-ins, and they won't work on certain – they just will not give you entry to certain blogs. I think we would be better off having a method of writing posts and having them submitted somehow – other than the standard Berkman WordPress method. There's been blogs there I've tried to jump on, and you write a post and it just will not go anywhere because WordPress won't let you in.
Okay, is this a Berkman issue, or is this a WordPress issue, or is this a, have you experienced this with other Berkman blogs that are, in other words, that are blogs that are at cyber.law.harvard.edu, or?
The answer is yes to both. It's a Berkman issue, but more so it's a WordPress issue.
Okay. So a couple things here. One is that once a technical problem has been discovered, they're really pretty good at Berkman, the geeks there, at running it down and fixing it. So I'm wondering whether or not that's something that just needs to be dealt with, or if this is something that's totally endemic with WordPress.
I think this is a WordPress problem, and it's the only, and I really am not down on WordPress and don't want to represent myself as such, but this is the one area where WordPress is similar to Drupal, how you can get lost in this sort of abyss.
Right.
And we really don't want that because it'll prevent people from posting and participating.
Okay, I'll tell you what, if you could write that up as a concern and describe the symptoms and where you encounter it, send it to me. I'll get it in what they call the geek cave and make sure that it gets dealt with. Because I think we have, I think just being that we're about open source at Berkman and presumably here too, we kind of have to use, I mean, we can't use TypePad. We're not going to use Blogger. We've got to use either, something like Drupal or WordPress. I have my problems with both of them, too, that are just UI issues, but I can live with them. But anyway, I think I'd like to assume that we can surmount those problems and they are not of a permanent or deal-breaking nature. Any other thoughts on that?
It seems to me that aren't we really talking about just aggregating some feeds? I mean,
I think that's a possibility. Here's what I would like to do. I would like, when I want to write something about VRM, to be able to post it on a Project VRM blog, and not just. I mean, what I've found is that the nature. I mean, I could put it at IT Garage. That's one possibility.
No. Then we'll have Drupal problems. No.
No. I'm not talking about me. I'm just talking about. I'm just speaking to Joe's question, which is, if enough of us are blogging about VRM or Project VRM, and we simply have a way of scrolling those partially or completely through a common blog, that might be fine, and we could start with that and then see what happens. Is that the suggestion?
Yeah, fine by me.
Okay.
Is this a separate login than the login onto the Project VRM?
I don't know. It could be, might not be. We could probably work that out.
Okay.
But I think
it seems like it would be ideal if we could, you know, perhaps register. This is sort of different than what you were just talking about, Doc, so let me walk through it. If I could just tag my own blog post with Project VRM or Project VRM post or something like that, and have that fed into a blog, then I don't have to deal with any other login.
Right. Okay.
Or editor or whatever. I just use the one that I'm comfortable with. But somehow we link up.
I think that would work fine. I mean, we could create a Technorati tag search that takes posts that are uniquely tagged and automatically, you know, just RSSs them out. Just basically use it as a router into a blog. I'm hearing my echo, so I'm kind of trying to ignore that. Anyway, I think that's probably the lowest labor approach to this. So let's look at that.
Okay, so I guess who's going to look into that?
I'm going to look into that.
Okay.
So I was explaining earlier, before we were all here, that I still owe all of us a vision statement. I've actually been working on that, and I have a particular project in mind for the world, if not for this particular crowd, that I'm also working on. I'm going to be posting at Linux Journal today. So I'll tell more about that later. But anyway, I just want to acknowledge that I still haven't posted the vision statement that I promised, and that was on my to-do list coming out of the meeting 2 weeks ago. So what other progress is going on? I mean, are we all here?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm here.
Still listening.
I'm getting a call from my wife, which I'm going to get off. I'm just going to set the phone down for a second while I answer this. Hang on.
You know, these things tend to happen in waves. I've not been answering my landline, but my cell phone has been ringing like mad, and I just took the last call because it was also one of those calls you can't avoid. Well, I guess if you're driving, you can avoid it. I also wonder if anyone is still stuck on the other call. I guess by now they would have given up.
Yeah, I think they would have given up by now.
Well,
I think logic would.
You made over there came through loud and clear.
All right, good.
So how many people are on this call now?
This is Britt.
One.
Ian.
Two.
Whit.
Three.
Joe?
4.
Dean?
5. Tom? 6. 7. Okay, and then Doc is 8. Okay, so.
It was the first
how many of you? Have many people? How many? In some things you can raise your hand and say, you know, click on something in a webinar thing. This is like going backwards in time, doing a survey. Who were there? How many of you went to the event on the 25th?
I can tell you that based on who's here, Ian, Joe, Doc, and I. Have I left anyone out who was there?
On this call, I'm not sure. And so.
No, I think that covers it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, actually, if you guys want to get onto the wiki, I'm going to be saving the notes pages fairly frequently.
Okay.
So you can alert me to errors or whatever. I know I didn't get all of those attendees.
Okay.
I'll be updating that in real time.
Okay. I should add notes to that same thing from that. This is we had random notes from the January 25th developers meeting, and I do we have a list of people who were there? I don't think we did. That's random notes. I guess we should pull those together a little bit because I'd like to identify everybody. I hate to say that I didn't know everybody's name later when I posted pictures. Not that many of them, but it'd be nice to know who was who there.
Did you make a Flickr group, Doc?
No, I did not.
Because I was going to say, if you made a Flickr group, you could just put a link to that.
Oh, that'd be cool. Okay.
That's if you're still using Flickr, because as you know, if we read about, this is talk about VRM issue, people being incredibly upset at being told you will do it this way because this is how we're doing it now.
Right. No, I'm waiting for the crisis when the what do they call them, the veterans or the old school people who were original Flickr people have to go in through their Yahoo account. I actually got caught in a kind of hell. I created a Flickr account for my wife for a kid's school, so she could post pictures. But she had a prior. I created a separate account that was a Yahoo based account or something, and paid the extra $30 or whatever it is. And they said, "Do you want to merge these accounts?" And I said no. I kept saying no, and they finally said you have to, and or the machine, you know, their system said I had to. And when I did, I ended up with an amateur account after paying $30. It was a complete waste. So,
so now it's true. Yahoo really has taken over Flickr.
Oh no, it has. It's a, you know, they are. Yeah, they're fucking it up. I don't know how else to put it.
They've managed to monetize free.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, I actually think that there's a that this is one of these areas where we need to where I think we get some, you know, some mileage for the area of VRM that touches identity management. Because the coming clash, and it's one that the Yahoos of the world are going to lose, is between the independent user-centric identity systems, which include OpenID, Microsoft's Card Space, and those are the primary two, but iNames, Higgins, and so forth, and these closed silos. I mean, I think the point at which, I'm not sure this is the only one, but I think one area where VRM could go nuclear, or as our president would say, nuclear, is, or viral, or catch fire, or snowball, or pick your verb, it is around single sign-on. I think that there's, you know, that's completely screwed up, and companies like Yahoo, expressing their inability to federate their own damn login systems, and to try to force the entire world to use their stupid system, which is broken to begin with. It's like, you know, the one that Flickr had was fine, right? I mean, there's no reason not to use that. But trying to force everybody into, you know, one particular system, I mean, this didn't work with Microsoft and Passport. Why would it work for them? But that's something people hate, you know. I mean, I mean, one of the things that I've been wanting to write about is how wrong so many of the not just the logins one has to go through, but the kind of crap you have to tell a website when you register in the first place about yourself. It's completely silly, you know. I mean, especially the ones where enterprise software is involved. You know, does your company have, you know, under 100 employees, 100 to 500 employees, are you, and they list 500 kinds of, you know, IT official, and you're none of those. You know, this is all examples of CRM at its worst that could be solved to some degree. Or
very rarely use the data they gather that way anyway.
What's that?
They very rarely use that data that they gather, so it's a waste of time.
No, they never do. They really don't. It's, you know, it's like, as we talked about, I think, at the meeting on the 25th, that, you know, I've heard, and maybe some others among us have heard as well, that that most grocery stores don't use even the data that they collect when you use the club cards and check out groceries. You know, there's just
those programs are not about marketing. They're about the new vice president.
Yeah.
of whatever company thinks that up.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, but I think that that's a...
Doc, I'd like to say, I think that a discussion on the Yahoo Flickr as a sort of touchstone point would be helpful. I think we'd get a certain viral oomph out of it, and I think it really is a classic large company says, here's how we're doing it, this is what they want, or here's what they're going to want because here's how we're doing it. And that sort of approach, I think, is very... I think this is like perfect timing for us to have a topic of discussion. I mean, we know a lot of the people who would be interested in this, you know, overall conversation can relate to that. And I think somehow this is useful for us.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So yeah, so here's an area where we have two overlapping areas of concern. One is VRM, and the other is identity. I'll tell you what, I'm going to try and start something on both sides of that. Like, how, I think the open question is, how would we from the customer's side seek to unfuck the what we could correctly call the Yahoo/Flickr problem? And I think, I mean, one of the things we need to find out to begin with is, what is it they are actually trying to do there? I mean, I'm not that familiar with it. I'm just familiar with it as a pain in my ass as a user. As somebody who otherwise avoids Yahoo but uses Flickr.
Well, this actually reminds me very much, you know, and I have a telecom background, of the way WorldCom bought companies, didn't allow the companies to operate the way they used to operate, didn't plan on how they would integrate them into the overall, and then basically in terms of streamlining would ruin the company in the process and have to lie on the financial reports, among other things.
Right.
But I mean, this is a case where integration actually defeats the purpose or changes the perception, and I believe, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different points of spin on this, again, which is why I think this is so useful for us to have as a discussion area.
Okay, so let's call a discussion, the VRM fix, VRM fix to the Flickr Yahoo problem. You know, which is actually two problems, but I think both of them need visiting. One is the inability of a company on the inside to federate more than one sign-on authentication system. And on the outside, the problem all users face with trying to single sign-on to all kinds of stuff. I mean, ideally, we shouldn't have to depend, I think, just on I've got a cookie in my browser to get into places. There's got to be a better way. What is the better way? How do we find the better way?
And why are people who turn off cookies treated as the equivalent of target?
That's another issue. But the it's a huge morass. But I think we can bring a fresh angle to it by coming from the user and not from the vendor side, and how you fix things on the vendor side.
My thought, Tom Hockett here with Connect for Growth. Our clients are corporations, and I get the sense from our discussion here is the feedback mechanism and the getting onto a system to give one's opinion on a vendor or an experience or all that is tending to revolve around the individual or the small business or the maybe they work for a large company, but they're not feeding back from within the corporation. Whereas I know in our scenario, companies keep it fairly near and dear to the heart of who gets onto these systems and what information and knowledge opinions get disseminated out beyond the walls of the organization. How have we evolved in that thinking? I mean, I haven't heard any of that discussion yet, so I don't know whether this is the time to discuss it, but I mean, there you go.
Well, I think, well, one of the things that came up in the meeting we had in California 2 weeks ago was that there is, I think as in your case as well, there's already a lot of, there has been a lot of work done on the business-to-business side. In other words, there's a lot to leverage in the way that companies have approached vendor relationship management in a literal sense between two businesses rather than between individuals and businesses. That's the first thing. And I forget who it was, but there's something like, was it you, Ian, or maybe somebody else had a list of 200 or so different variables that are often involved in these things.
Yeah, that would be me.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff, and that's
mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are,
and we have about 80 ourselves that we consider. Yeah.
Yeah. So there are not only wheels that don't need to be reinvented here. There are probably entire gears and machines that don't need to be reinvented, and that might be useful models for talking about what individuals can do in relating to companies. That's on the one side. On the other side, and I think Ian, you may have brought this up as well, that we are inevitably going to run into use cases or scenarios where the set systems are so deeply entrenched that there's no way we're going to penetrate them quickly or easily, and effectively putting them off the table for VRM in the short term.
Short term, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and so, the example that I've most commonly used with rental cars is probably one of those. I've been told by no less than a corporate VP at Budget that the thought of any customer having serious input outside their extremely limited and lame and almost brain dead, but extant and not likely to change CRM system is approximately nil.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, as that guy put it to me now about a year and a half ago, look, we're just trying to fix our website at this point. We can't even begin to open up much more, but don't count it out, but don't count on it. But I think in the case of something like Yahoo, that's an interesting case. I mean, this is a web-based company to begin with. They don't have the drag of the physical world on them like a rental car company does. They're trying to integrate and federate something like a Flickr. We have relationships with people there. I think that those, you know, that's probably not the only case, but I think it's an interesting one to talk about because, I think they are more flexible, and we might make a little bit more headway there. I think that though that there are, I think if we look at two things, one is what we already know or could learn from the B2B world, and use cases in the individual, I hate to say consumer, to business world, you know, that there might be some overlap there that's not obvious, at least to me right now. You know, we might want to explore what some of those might be. You know, what are some of the businesses? And it may even be areas within a large industrial category, like say healthcare, where something could be done. I was talking with my son, who's an executive with Steve Case's new company, which is called Revolution Healthcare, a couple days ago in D.C. And they're very interested in what VRM could be about, and they're basically kind of a tabula rasa company. And he told me that Steve Case's timeline for fixing healthcare is basically 20, 25 years. It's not, you know, he's taking a very long-term orientation to it. There may be something there as well. Maybe there's some subset of a large category like that where what we learn in B2B could be useful in C2B as well. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. But small B.
Small B, yeah. Yeah, small B.
Doc, this is Britt. Whit and I have been talking about this offline and continuing with this idea of fractional horsepower purchase orders.
Mm-hmm.
Companies are very accustomed to processing purchase orders. They have all sorts of rich rituals around those.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about purchase orders, they comfortably know what that means. And if we can create a mechanism by which these customer wishes, the seeker, the wishes of the seeker, if you will, can be expressed in purchase order language and vocabularies, it'll be much easier for these guys to say, oh, money over the transom, good. And so in a sense, it's kind of an API, and that's certainly the direction we're going to push it on our
own. So I have you, Britt and Joe, have you guys been in touch at all, talking about how to reconcile, if there is any reconciliation required, maybe saying the same thing, the concept of a fractional horsepower purchase order and the concept of an individual RFP?
We haven't talked about it. I'm not sure in my scope that there's any implicit difference.
Okay.
Or necessary difference.
Okay.
I mean, to me, the personal RFP should be flexible enough to handle a full corporate RFP down to, the simplest personal request.
Okay, so here's a question. So it seems to me that there are both technical and social protocols required here, right? So let's say it's possible right now to create a purchase order that's sent to the world in some way. What are the Britt suggesting that the template of a common business purchase order provides some of the social side of that, the pro formalities of that. I'm wondering if there are in the, say, in the B2B world or anywhere, the technical protocols that might be involved. What would those be? I mean, there. We've talked about RSS, but I don't know whether there aren't other forms of what we might call broadcast or narrowcast notification that would do the same thing.
Well, I know, you know, I'm just going to pick up what the two Chris Carfee mentioned. EDI is a whole framework for that sort of thing, and
right,
I don't know enough to put it in context.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chris also mentioned RosettaNet, which has done similar work in terms of trying to establish some communication protocols around purchasing.
And there was that whole EBXML initiative.
EDI-XML, that's interesting.
No, EB-XML, business XML.
EB as in Edgar
Echo
Boy?
Bravo XML.
Edgar Bravo?
Anyway.
Anybody know about that?
It shows how it's really gotten traction.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I think these are topical areas that we, you know, that need visiting, if not by us, by somebody. And it's worth noting that you know, we have an infinitude that needs to be explored eventually. But, you know, those are good ideas. What was the other thing that Chris mentioned besides what were the two that he mentioned that you said, Joe?
EDI and RosettaNet.
Oh, and RosettaNet, okay.
And Chris was going to look into the licensing issues on RosettaNet as to whether or not they were proprietary or they were something we could build on, et cetera.
If you'll add that, Joe, if you'll add that to the wiki, I have a call scheduled tomorrow morning with Chris, and I can make sure to mention that to him.
Okay.
Doc, did you meet Nate Garvis at that retreat in October?
Which one?
Oh, the Jerry's.
I don't think Jeff was there.
Oh, not Jeff Jarvis, Nate Garvis.
Oh, Nate Garvis. I don't remember.
Okay, he's the vice president for political affairs at Target. But in a phone call yesterday, we're talking about other stuff. I mentioned this whole VRM, and that's a favorite project of yours, which, of course, makes them interested. But, you know, Target might be the kind of organization which would be more responsive to this than most, and they're in a
mm-hmm.
position to drive a lot of vendors. You know, one thought here, and I'm going to operate on this unless somebody says it's really crazy. Since we are doing the initiative, I think we have to, was it postal law? You know, we have to accept everything and be careful what we put out. And the idea is that we have to somehow conform to the business practices of business so that it's very easy to slot that in. And the onus is on us, it seems to me, to design something that fits into business so easily they literally think of it as money over the transom rather than some piece of work they have to do. And, you know, the purchasing department, which is the people who issue POs, they make it their business to understand everything that the vendors need to know in order to supply something. You know, it's like the guys at the auto parts store with these big books, you know. They understand how to parse out a communication in a way that the vendor or vendors to whom it's aimed just respond automatically. And I think that's going to end up being our obligation in some way.
Mm.
I agree completely.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would also want to support the idea about Target. There's a different world in which I operate, and Target has been amazingly proactive, positive, and, you know, like good business. It sort of amazes me because I can't walk into a Target store and not get the heebie-jeebies, but it is amazing how forward-thinking the company is. And I remember Nate. Nate was working on a community. I can't remember. He had a very interesting catchphrase. I actually sat next to Nate at Jerry's retreat during one of the sessions. But if Nate's at Target, that I think this is a, you know, there's a lot of reasons this is very positive, and I do believe they would be open and receptive to this. And Britt's point about make it appealing and positive and perceived as revenue building for them. These are all wonderful ideas.
Yeah, I would like to connect it back to Doc's conversations with budget, which is to say, although perhaps the initial rental car request doesn't fit into their current system, I think if we had something that was limited to how they think about availability, that's where we need to start.
Right.
Yeah, the people
right.
to talk to are the marketing departments, not the IT department.
That could be. The person I talked to was a VP marketing. To be fair, it was a year and a half ago. The world changes. I'm not sure. It wouldn't be worthwhile. I don't think I want to talk to them like tomorrow. But I think after we have some traction going, where we have, some thinking and some code and some ideas and some other things that we can, present, I'd like to, we might want to approach them again, or invite them to a workshop. That's actually one of the agenda items that I have here. Is like what are the next either meeting or workshop ideas we might have here. We could there's a internet identity workshop coming up. I'm going to be talking VRM there, and I think it might be a good thing to have some of us come to that thing.
Is there a date set for that?
Yeah, there is. And hold on a second. I was stepping out of my office because now there's a chainsaw operating outside this window. So I'm gonna hang it on the table. They went around the corner with it. So I'm gonna find out. Let's see, February, March.
Sounds like a movie we've all heard of.
Yeah. okay. Yes, it's April 16th and 17th. It's at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California, which is, it's actually the old SGI, the old purple SGI building, just off of 101 in Mountain View. Pretty convenient location from either SFO or San Jose, kind of between the two. Maybe not.
Back one other thought. What about getting somebody from the Harvard Business School Marketing Department to sit in on some Berkman stuff?
That's a possibility. I'd like to. One of the things I've had on my agenda over the last few visits to Berkman, I spent a week a month there, is to approach people in the business school and in some of the other departments there to see if we can recruit their interest in this thing. I'm probably not going to be able to do that right away because I'm going to be there, not next week, but the week after, for public broadcasting set of conference days. That the whole thing is going to be about public broadcasting. So I don't know if I have a chance there. I might approach it, but I think I'd like to wait on that until and make that like a, maybe in my March or April visit. What do y'all think of having something a little bit more, doing another one of these things as part of the Internet Identity Workshop?
Yep,
kind of a
good idea.
Butting off the side of it. Okay, well, let's just do that. I mean, that workshop is, I mean, it's a workshop. It's not a, it's kind of like the one that we had in San Francisco the day after the VRM meeting that we had. But it's open. It's kind of, you pay by passing the hat. And it's, there are no keynotes or anything. There might be a little talk on day one where people go over, kind of report on what's happened in a particular category. But mostly it's just a great place to sit or, you know, sit around a big table or go into a big room with a whiteboard and work stuff out.
Yeah, I would. I don't know if April's the right timing for it, Doc, but I would very much like to see us get to the point where we have some focused time on specific initiatives.
I agree.
And where we have secured some involvement from some of the vendors who would be part of that initiative.
Right, right. Now, something that's unfortunate is that I need to make a call on this later. I've got there's a fellow at HP who's very interested and actually wanted me to have a talk at HP the week after next, and unfortunately that's going to collide with all this public broadcasting stuff. I'll need to probably reschedule that. But yeah, I think that there's some real possibilities here, and we do have relationships with some vendors. I'd like some of us to think a bit about where VRM would fit in existing, say, commerce systems that Sun and HP and Microsoft and other vendors already sell. I mean, what, I don't know. I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here. People among us know some people with some of these bigger guys. When and how do we want to approach them? And so on.
So we're taking a top-down approach to the market of vendors from the HPs, the very largest vendors of stuff, and that's where you think where we have to get traction early on with those big players. Otherwise, getting down to mid-sized, small organizations is just not where it's going to start.
I don't know. I'm not sure of that. I'm only bringing them up because, you know, in a way, they're kind of like low-hanging fruit. They may be low-hanging bowling balls in the sense that they may be hard to dislodge or something. But a terrible metaphor. I think we want to kiss every frog, I guess, and see what happens.
Yeah.
Wise move here is to gather the frogs and then decide which ones we'll kiss. Obviously, you know, we'll start small and hopefully at some point reach many more, but we can't reach everybody in the first cut.
Right. I mean, I think, for example, with Sun, I know Jonathan Schwartz, I know a bunch of other people at Sun. I think they'd be pretty easy to approach and just say, at this point, hey, look at this, we're doing this. I just want you to take a look at it and see what you think so far. If you want to be involved, be involved. But there's also, and this is worth talking about, if we look at what Berkman's role here can be, Berkman created Creative Commons. It created, or it grew out of Creative Commons anyway. Creative Commons grew out of Berkman activity. Global Voices, PRX, which is a public radio exchange. Stop Badware is a current thing that's probably going to grow out of there. The user-centric identity, the identity workshops that are happening. As I wrote yesterday, I counted well over 7,000 emails that have been on the Identity Gang list alone, and I think the Identity Gang now includes like about 500 people on that list. That grew out of a really informal Berkman project. So, but these projects are tend to be funded by large companies. So that one was and still is funded by IBM, Microsoft, I think Best Buy, and a few others. British Telecom, perhaps Johnson & Johnson, have expressed informally some interest in funding some work at Berkman on this. So I just want to put it out there that, you know, any guidance anybody wants to provide on that would be interesting. Where Berkman has been helpful in the past, not helpful so much as most interested in the past, has been around the legal side of things. So Creative Commons, for example, provided artists with the means to assert in both legal terms and machine readable terms what artists were interested in asserting about how their work is used. I think we, you know, if we're looking at VRM as a set of assertions by, whether they're RFPs or some other thing, by individuals toward vendors, you know, if there are probably a lot of areas here that could stand to have, you know, academic study, as it were. Or in some cases, what Al Berkman does is just sort of provide a clubhouse for things. Like for me, I mean, I'm operating right now as a Berkman fellow in this thing. So any thoughts anybody has about that would be, you know, would be welcome. They're really incredibly open to doing whatever.
And just as everybody takes a call from Steve Jobs, most people are interested in a relationship with something at Harvard.
I think probably.
I told Jobs I wouldn't take the call until the spinning ball stops.
Now there's a Mac user.
I think if I knew I was getting a call from Steve Jobs, I'd think, what did I do? What have I said?
I have a couple of thoughts. Again, this is from the conversation earlier that Whit and I had, and that is that one reason to go with big companies or name brands for the moment is that it sets aside the reputation issue. In other words, if somebody says, I want a computer that does these things, and they put out an RFP to, among others, Dell and HP and whoever, they know what those brands are. I mean, it's clear in their mind. If you are looking to connect up with some guy who's somewhere in Chicago and he's a white box guy who puts together stuff, there's a whole other layer of data you need to know, a lot of metadata about that guy. So I think that's a later sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, speaking of avoiding problems, so we're trying to dance around the reputation problem as long as possible. The other is the sign-on problem. You know, any of these vendors, the real complexity we have is the difficulty of getting them to hold still for a deal and having a good enough, you know, getting them to do the work of telling you what they have today. This is that rental car model again, where, you know, you're on Orbitz or Expedia, and they, you know, you start following down one rental car option, you all the way down that tree or up that tree, and you can't hold that in place. But they don't require you to sign in to expose that information. So what I'm suggesting is that, do we really need to have a sign-on kind of event in order to learn this information about what they want to sell us?
No, we don't, actually. I think in many cases we have sign-on where we don't really need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
I'll take the devil's advocate on that, is that, I mean, when you're dealing with a group like an IBM or an HP, which a lot of it's out, what they're doing is out in the public domain once they want it to be out in the public domain. If you're a consulting firm with some specialty or some sort of, you know, vendor of, you know, with a, some sort of anything proprietary of what you do, if it means that your competition is going to be able to go in and read at length what that is, you know, there is the thought that you want to keep it, you're not likely to reveal as much as if you think or know that your competition is going to be going in. And it's just like on your website, you don't put everything that you do on your website,
right?
For that reason. So there's that, you know, weighing it out. I mean, we ask 8 pages of questions on average of a vendor, depending what space they're in, if they're e-learning or they're just a straight consultant, or they do facilities rentals or something like that. There's different amounts of questions that we ask of them depending on the space. But
do you,
again,
do you ask it every time, or just the first time you get acquainted?
Well, they have an access to come back in and complete their profile, but they're generally three quarters of the time these days being told by a corporation to go register and answer those 6-8 pages of questions. If I tell them to go there, they answer about maybe half of them. If Bank ABC tells them to go there, they're more likely to answer all of them. And then once a second corporation tells them to be there, now they've got their marketing department making sure they're filling out every last question. So the value of the information in the apples to apples and all that sort of stuff. But there is that, and the other trend I also see is the bigger the company, the less likely they want to fill out 6 or 7 pages because they think their brand should stand on its own and you know, why do I need to fill out this information? So you get, that's another trend you tend to get, whereas an organization a little hungrier or wants more exposure, they're all over completing all the questions. So anyway, that's my thoughts.
I'm wondering if there's a, I mean, is there anything in the course of, if we look at the pile of questions that would be asked on one side and answered on the other, is there in the systems you're talking about, which I'm not familiar with, something that allows this to be to some degree automatically filled out? In other words, is it possible for a company to have ready the answers to at least 70 or 80 of the 90 most common questions or something like that? And if so, is that a model that might work for individuals as well?
Well, that's
yes.
Definitely a big part of the whole identity framework.
Right.
What we're talking about are claims that could be bundled into an info card.
Exactly. That's exactly the way to put it. I mean, so part of what I'd like to see happen here, and I think a lot of people want this, and I don't know whether VRM solves it or not yet, but it's worth visiting, which is, you know, to have your list of claims about yourself or about your company that you're willing to selectively reveal under the right circumstances, then have the protocols that allow those, you know, authentication and trust to be established, and then have that stuff handled automatically to a degree. Now, it could be with large companies, these things are so careful, are so risky to disclose that you really need, you know, a human being to go through the 8 pages of stuff and answer them. But I would think that they're, if the kind of questions that are being asked, the kind of answers that are being given of a pro forma nature, then it could be automated to some degree, and we could come up with something that would make use of that automation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we've thought of it ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, but
this is the thing we'd like to be able to do here. Because, you know, it has to do with context, you know. I mean, so if I'm going through the world and I, you know, in some cases I just want a cup of coffee, in other cases I want to, you know, hire a car or stay at a hotel or get into a parking lot or whatever else you might do. I mean, there's just all kinds of things that could be done in the world where we're always selectively revealing who we are and what we're doing here. I don't know. I'm just wondering what's already been done here that we could leverage in a way that works.
Well, I'd like to shine some light on the issue of sign-on, that it's really an aspect of relationship,
mm-hmm.
and it's theoretically more secure. Well, it's definitely more secure, but it's also parallel to just cookies. I mean, the fact that when I go back to Expedia and they have my cookie and they know the airport that I typically fly out of, that's a relationship.
Yeah.
And I like that. I don't really want every contact to be anonymous, although there are times when I do want it to be able to be anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
But anonymous is sort of orthogonal or even counterindicative of relationships.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it, you know, there even what we mean by anonymous is not all that clear. In fact, this is one of the areas that Bergman is working on getting funding for the study of. So for example, one goes into a Starbucks and orders a cappuccino and gives a name other than their own, and does it every day, they're neither anonymous nor well identified, but they are sort of pseudonymous. But there's maybe a relationship there, the store may know that every time a guy named Bill shows up that they're going to order, a double decaf cappuccino. In any case, there is a very widespread perception among ordinary folks, especially that especially on the net, that there's just a lot of friction involved in dealing with companies that want to know a little too much. As my wife has put it more than once to me, she said, "I don't want more identity. I want less identity. I don't want to have to be. I want United to remember who the hell I am. They never do, right? And on the other hand, say, click here if you want me to remember you, and you do, and they don't, and you have to enter the same crap again. The browser remembers because you start filling it out, and it says, oh yeah, last time this password went with that thing, but in this context, but that's intelligence in the browser. It's not intelligence on United's side. But on the other hand, there are many times where all she wants or anybody might want is this white paper from that company, and you have to fill out a whole bunch of crap that is really intended to tell their sales department whether or not you're a good prospect, and rather transparently so, and annoyingly so. And that's the kind of thing that really pisses people off often. And why she would say that. I have a cousin, in fact, who says he doesn't do anything on the net that requires a password. And it deals him out of a lot of stuff, but he just hates it. And I wonder how many other people are like that. Or whether we can surmount that, or maybe that's just beyond,
But I think those might be two separate things. The question of a potentially persistent identity, essentially an identity that you can actively and selectively share, is one thing. But I think that VRM really doesn't address the scenario you're talking about, where some company is asking for a big crap load of information to download a white paper. Because
right.
I think that's a related but a distinct issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right there. Right. Yeah, I think so. Yesterday that's high on my mind, in part because there was a white paper from, I forget who it was. It was the computer world. I'm on one of their lists, and it was some study by some outfit, and in order to get this PDF, I had to fill out all kinds of bullshit, I hated doing it, but I wanted it real bad, and all I remember, actually, to talk about branding here, all I remember is that I hated it. I didn't remember who I was hating, or who I got it from, the name of the company, or any of that.
Doc, this is why people create names like Less Is More.
I've done that. I actually gave up a while ago. I usually fill out the second address line as sweet something or other, and I have a code to see whether or not I get starting to get junk mail addressed to me at sweet something, and it would have come from this outfit that sold my name to so-and-so. But it turned into too big a pain in the ass. I never really went very far with it. So where are we at this point? Have we covered bases that we wanted to cover? I'm out of my office right now because they're cleaning in there. So.
There were a few things I wanted to touch on.
Okay.
One was just get confirmation around going ahead with initiative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had suggested that development area was maybe actually what I was sort of talking about, but I'm willing to go either way.
No, that's fine with me. That sounds good to me, initiatives.
Okay, and then I would definitely like some feedback, Doc, on what I wrote up as principles.
Mm-hmm.
As I wrote that, I definitely felt like I was walking on eggshells.
Okay, I hate to say I have not looked closely at it yet, but I promise I will.
Okay, that's fine. I just want to point you to it because this is really being accreted around your effort, your inspiration.
Okay.
And then also on the homepage, I had moved a couple of items down with proposed deletions.
Mm-hmm.
All that content is now over in initiative brainstorming. But
okay.
I didn't, you know, we haven't yet figured out sort of any editorial process or policy or things like that. So
yeah, and I think that I think we're just going to have to discover those. I think at this point we probably have a number of in fact, I know I found one the other day. I forget what they call them, widows or something, or orphans. Right?
Yeah.
Orphan topics to which there are no internal links currently. That may have been on the front page. It was, you know, may have been linked to in the front page and no longer are. And I know that whatever system we're using there allows you to find the orphans and, you know, kill them or move them somewhere. It's very easy to spawn topics by just putting brackets around something, and all of a sudden you've created this other page, and you want to change it, and that page is still out there. So, but you know, I mean, one of the areas where I think we need, I'm not sure what to do with, because it's interesting historically is the list of blogs that have mentioned VRM, but I've run across, you know, like 10 in the last few days, and I have not added them to the list because the list is so long. It's kind of like, you know, a very long course syllabus or something, and I think we need some other approach to that, but I'm not even sure what to take. That's why having them, you know, having a VRM blog where this stuff just gets, you know, just scrolls into a place where Google finds it and Technorati finds it, and it's coherently aggregated makes sense, whereas manually entering them into the wiki seems like a labor-intensive and in the long run not useful. But I'm not really sure what approach to take with that.
Well, I think if we push out the idea of just some distinct tag on VRM-related posts, that's
mm-hmm.
at least a starting point, because then, you know, we've got a variety of ways that we can start, you know, aggregating and displaying that data, and, you know, it's an easy way to track it, because I think that otherwise
yeah.
we are sort of stuck in, you know, in manual land, which isn't a whole lot of fun.
Right, exactly. So I propose that we just use Project VRM as a tag for that, and I'll work with Doug, who's my graduate assistant, to set up the blog to publish, you know, or republish those blogs, those posts, or pointers to those posts.
I would just ask one other question. I'm taking a quick look at Joe's excellent notes on the call on the wiki. I thought I heard the join in note, and I'm wondering if there's someone who's joined and we're not aware of.
Nope, that was Whit. I had to drop off for a few minutes.
Okay, mystery solved. Thanks, Whit.
Yeah, that often happens. I've actually, you know, fallen off calls before and had to call back in.
I would like to suggest, just as a general point of discussion, that if possible, we have an East Coast meeting as well.
Right. I know that Berkman is also going to insist on that. So, and that's a And that's a good idea.
And for what it's worth, I offer myself as a carpooler.
Okay.
I'm in the East Coast, so there you go.
Well, you know, I'm a suburban guy. I've got a car. I'm ready to drive.
Yeah. Well, there's a, you know, with enough warning, there's a, the Internet Identity Workshop, the what we call the Identity Mashup that we had last year. Hang on a second. I think I have to sign something. Nope. I'm not sure. I see. Okay. All right. Guys. I'm gonna have to drop off in a few minutes. So just so you know, or at least drop off for a few minutes. Okay. So we had a thing called the Identity Mashup last year at in Cambridge, and it was kind of interesting because it on the one hand, the first day, I think it was a 2-day thing, maybe it was a 3-day thing. The first day was talks at a large lecture hall where they hold moot court trials at the Harvard Law School, and that was really good in the in the way that conferences tend to be, you know, where at their best, which are really good authoritative people standing in front and talking about what they know very well. And then the next day we went to MIT to the media lab there, where we had a completely open unconference thing where everybody just walked outside with chairs and gathered around trees and were on their own, and that worked extremely well too. And so I'm just thinking, and that was done in the summertime, which is handy in Boston because it's not cold like it and crazy like it is now. Anyway, that was a good experience, and that was something that Berkman could do a good job of hosting and making work. So, I think we do something in the East Coast and something that's modeled on that. I like doing things that have been done before in a way that worked, and just kind of copying and pasting it.
Just from a perspective of this group, what is the ultimate goal? Short term and long term, are we looking for test of events, or are we still just brainstorming for the next month or two? And I mean, there are solutions out there. There are obviously thoughts and technologies that are out there that, you know, is there a goal or of 2 months from now to having, this is my first phone call on this.
Sure.
And Doc, you and I have talked, but,
mm-hmm. I have two different goals here, or two different kinds of goals. One is around. Okay. At a practical level, one is just around. Conversational activities and. Development projects going forward, and that's, you know, when are we going to talk next? What are we going to talk about? Who's doing what? Basically, growing the wiki and making everything, fanning the fires in the various directions they go. The other is a kind of long, and this is what I've been working on with the vision thing, which is a long-term goal in the marketplace. And my ambition, and I'd like to see other people talk about this too, and have some discussion around it, is nothing less than kind of fixing markets. And I'm not even sure exactly what I mean by that, except, you know, beyond getting rid of or reducing the kind of unproductive asymmetries that we have currently between the supply side and the demand side, at least when we're talking about the B2C world, you know, the individuals getting along in the world. I've felt for a long time that it would be much better for companies if they could actually relate to their customers in a lot more in more and better ways, and not just make a bunch of judgments about them and hope for the best, which is what often happens with CRM. And so that's sort of the the altruistic goal that I have, but I'd actually like to know what other people's goals are as well. So that's, you know, I know with Britt, he wants to fix politics and governance, and I think that's a doable thing. I think that and fixing the way membership organizations work, I think that's a doable thing as well. I think it's a kind of vertical area of functionality that can be addressed with software and protocols and practices and things like that. You know, and I think in some isolated, business categories, we can attack some problems from the, you know, like the Yahoo Flickr sign-on problem from the user side, aggressively and get somewhere and get some mojo out of it.
I'd like to add that I think the fact that we have a forum for discussion not aligned with any commercial organization is an important thing simply to be and to further discussion. The fact that there's this Berkman, what we'll call the Berkman engine underneath so that something can emerge from it. As you mentioned, Doc, a lot of good things have emerged from Berkman, from incubators of this sort. And the idea that we could perhaps build tools that would then be generally used tools and public domain tools. I mean, there are commercial endeavors in this area and more power to them. My point is that I think one of the goals here is to create tools that would be open source and ubiquitous tools.
Yes, yes, exactly. I think so, and that's why I decided in the first place that this was a development project. This is not just a let's talk about it project. It's actually a development project. Creative Commons was not a development project. It was basically, you know, kind of a law school project. It's like, what are the licenses that we can create? And then secondarily and later, though no less importantly, how can we make these machine readable so that, markets could grow around it? They didn't start with how can we fix the market for music, but rather how can we help artists create their own licenses independently of any company, so they could assert the freedoms that their work carried and the conditions under which they're used. So that was sort of a law school project that started with Harvard Law School and it went to the Stanford Law School.
Wasn't that licensed relationship management?
Yeah, in a way it was. The interesting thing, though, is I've had a lot of conversations with people about this just recently, and there's a and with the Suitwatch, the newsletter I sent out yesterday, I got some interesting responses from it from people in the music industry saying that that musicians are a really interesting case in that they are about conversations and relationships to begin with, and really do not want intermediaries in the way, or if they do, they want the nature of what they're doing respected well, and having a mechanism on the other side that can meet the Creative Commons licenses from the user side would be an interesting thing. There's a really charged area here. I mean, I pointed Tony Fadell yesterday to what we're doing, and in so doing pointed Apple for the first time. Tony's the primary inventor of the iPod, and he's on IM, and I know him. And when Steve Jobs came out with that thing saying, fuck DRM, we don't want to deal with it, and basically Steve Jobs didn't talk to, this is a point that Dave Weiner made this morning, it was a really good one, that he didn't start with the New York Times. He didn't go to Jar Markov first and say, here's what I want to announce. He just, they just posted something on the Apple website that said, and it was in plain text saying, it was an essay by Jobs saying, we'd rather not do DRM. And we want the record companies to stop doing DRM. And he's basically saying, we can continue selling music. And that's an interesting thing. And so, I would like to, I would like artists to get paid for their work. I don't think of what I get, say, off LimeWire as stealing, especially if I'm if I'm downloading music that I've already got on vinyl, for example, or I've already got on a CD, but I just don't want to go to the trouble of sticking in and ripping. I just soon get it off the net someplace. It's easier. But I've already bought and paid for that music. But there are lots of artists that are, you know, almost fallen off the radar, never got on the radar of any of the record companies. Record companies neglected them. You know, that I would like to be able to support in some way, in a voluntary way. And how do we do that? I think that's I'd love to see us, whoever of us is able to step forward and say to Steve Jobs and to the record industry, okay, here's something that we can provide on the user side that can relate to Creative Commons licensing on the other side. And that an intermediary like Apple can collect money on. You know, what would that be? How would we do that? I think that's an interesting question.
Well, for what it's worth, and I want to point out also that it's 3:08, and so I think we need to look at wrapping this up very soon. 3:08 East Coast. But I want to say, you know, I've been in the broadcasting business. I've done lots of work in the recorded music industry. You know, and you know, back when I was in the radio business, everybody thought I was a lawyer. It's a very thorny area, and the only way to get discussion going with any action. I mean, listen, I saw the DRM piece, and my knee-jerk response was, "Oh yeah, I don't see any reflection of that on iTunes." And I like to think I'm sort of enlightened in this area. Anyway, but my point is that you need to bring together a group of names of note as well as companies of note, a variety of companies.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you that the people on the Warner side and the people on the Universal side have completely different viewpoints on this stuff.
Sure.
And then when you bring, I forget the name of the pair, Bertelsmann. When you bring Bertelsmann in, their global viewpoint is very different, and yet, you know, they're certainly operating on these shores. And then you bring in, I would love to have Lessig join a discussion like this. And also,
yeah,
there's an interesting new version of retail where e-tail is taking over. But yet, you'll find that the recorded music companies still feel an incredible alliance and allegiance to what we would think of as traditional record stores or the traditional vehicles of distribution. And there are some corporate and political reasons for that. In addition to, there's a cultural change that hasn't taken place on the very top corporate levels that, you know, it's a matter of enlightenment and concern and care. They simply just don't know.
Right.
And while to some of us that would seem shocking because we tend to live in a, we know what's going on in the connected world. They really don't, and they don't understand that it changes. And another point, and you know, I've made this point a few times in different places. There are people whose compensation is based on the old model, and so changing the model threatens their compensation, and they really don't want to change it. And then there are those who think like that, and also think that how they look this quarter is based on the way it was structured before. Therefore, it's frightening to change that for fear that the bottom will fall out of stock price. And so they're not really thinking about, they're not even thinking about moving product. They're thinking about the apparent look of things so that they look good on the market. And, I mean, so there's a lot of areas here to cover, and it goes well beyond VRM. But, I mean, if something
right.
of that sort could be put together, I would love to work on that.
Okay, so what I, okay, so two things. One is that, I would invite us in full respect of everything you just said to also try to overlook as best we can the friction involved in the bodies, you know, from the bodies at rest that are going to stay at rest and are going to fight it every way they can. I mean, Steve Jobs is mostly talking to the European record companies, which is where he's encountering some trouble on this right now. I think he's basically said that he sold the American companies on it. It's the European ones. But I would like, if we can, and I don't know if we can or not, I think it's a tall order. I don't know at all. I think it'd be really cool if we were able to come back at, you know, at Jobs and at iTunes and, you know, and say, here's something here's something that allows people who like music to, you know, to speak to, you know, and do business with artists, you know, on a, you know, in a way where both can, you know, relate, whatever that means. I don't know. I mean, I just like to see something at the user's side that a Jobs can look at and say, holy shit, that's cool. It means that we don't have to bear the full responsibility of siloing everything. I mean, that's what I want to have happen. I would like to see some ahas on the large company side that, you know, here and there that say, wait a minute, maybe we don't have to trap everybody into our system. Maybe we can, and that's basically what Jobs is saying there. We don't want to have to be, you know, it may look like we want to trap everybody into the iTunes, iPod system, but we don't, you know. I mean, you know, they could be what, you know, what Sony was to transistor radios, in the sense that you could pick up any radio station on those things and not just, you know, not just the ones that, you know, work on your radio, as it were. So that's one thing. The other thing is, and this is where I'm at right now, okay, and I'm going to be speaking in the week after next on Friday at a public broadcasting convention. And I want to talk, and basically I've told, I'm going to talk about fundraising, and I'm going to talk about a VRM approach to fundraising, and I'm not sure what I'm going to say yet, but I'm going to write something today on Linux Journal that's going to, you know, invite people to help me out here, to help us out here, and say, okay, what is it we can equip viewers and listeners with that make it easier for them to pay for what they get out of public broadcasting? What can we do on the user's end, not just on the supply side, but on the demand side? What can we equip people with? And so I'm going to be doing some thinking out loud on that in Linux Journal that'll hopefully go up today. And so I just like, you know, the rest of us, I invite the rest of y'all to help me out with that, whatever that means. That's a stake in the dirt that's, you know, 2 weeks from tomorrow, and I like to go in there and have something that is interesting if it doesn't outright blow people's minds.
Hey, a seed of an idea I'll plant for you, Doc, is it's the problem you're solving is actually parallel to how do individual creators monetize on YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
Because the access modalities for YouTube are the same as for NPR.
Right. Similar. The difference with NPR and with PBS is that there's just massive channel conflict.
Correct.
And they know that. I mean, that's part of what's going on here. They know they have channel conflict. They know that the listeners tend to like things a la carte. Podcasting has shown them that. They've embraced podcasting, but they don't know what to do after that. They're afraid of, even at the same time as they want to embrace the fact that that the number, you know, 1 through 15 top downloads on iTunes are NPR podcasts that nobody's paying for, by the way. You know, and so that's money that's, you know, that's listening that's not going to, and money that's not going to the local stations, which are their distribution mechanisms.
Yeah, you know, which I also must point out is an incredibly, it has the opportunity to be totally misleading as a standalone statement. What it means is that downloaders represent a group that has done a great deal with certain things, and it doesn't necessarily change the model on which they exist.
Right.
It means that people can now use an MP3 instead of the cassette they used to make to listen to things over and over again. I could go on and on about that, but that's
right. Yeah, and I don't want to because I actually have to get off. So, but I just want to tell you all that I'm going to be doing this later today, and I'm interested in having any help I can get. So,
and a final sort of wiki note, at least on the thread about our goals.
Okay.
I put some things in there that didn't quite get in this conversation. So
okay.
Feel free to dive in and add your near-term and long-term goals.
Okay, great.
I think Joe deserves a round of
Joe, you've done incredible.
Virtual applause for what he's done on the way.
Yeah, I'm looking now. Very good.
Glad I could do it.
All right, for what it's worth, I've recorded this. I'm going to see about downloading it and perhaps just making it as a I may just put it on my server, and as opposed to making it a public podcast, just make it available for people to listen to on a stream basis or a download basis.
Okay. Okay.
All right, thanks, everyone. Next time when I put a notice out and send an email out, I'll just use one phone number. So
yeah, that would be a good idea.
Bye.
Very good.
All right, so we're going to do this again in 2 weeks, right?
Okay.
All right.
Two Thursdays from now, same time, same place.
Okay.
Very good.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so long, everybody.
Cheers, everybody.
Bye-bye.